Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. Super Bowl is set, and it has a whole lot of work to do to live up to Championship Sunday. Pats in the big game again after Tom Brady got the ball and never gave it back. Meanwhile, there aren't enough hurricanes at the bars on Bourbon Street that can calm down Saints fans after the referees miss an obvious pass interference call that cost them a spot in the Super Bowl. Does the league need more replay review? It's not even March yet. Both Cubs and Cardinals fans are at each other's throats, courtesy of Chris Bryant. Meanwhile, Theo says he's still looking to make additions to the roster before spring training starts. Can he find arms that he needs, or is it too late? Don't look now, but the Bulls are on a roll. That's right. They've won one in a row, beating the Cavs and ending their 10-game slide. And they have made double-digit threes in three straight games. Is Boylan Ball starting to open up? And welcome in to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. I hope you had a good weekend. I'm David Kaplan. Panel for today's show. He is one half of the Mully and Haw show at The Score and with the Chicago Tribune. He is David Haw. He is Patrick Sharp, former Blackhawks star, now working here at NBC Sports Chicago. And he is the great Pat Boyle, host of all of our Blackhawks coverage. And you hear him as well on ESPN 1000. All right, let's get started with some hockey coverage. We have you here. And it's interesting to see how the Blackhawks are playing yesterday. 8 goals against the defending Cup champs. Did that stun you? They were that productive.
I was at the game. I was sitting upstairs a little bit, and I saw the 2-0 quick start. And I looked over to my buddy, and I said, this is a game that can turn into 6-5, the way that these teams are playing right now. And sure enough, it was 8-5. One of the most memorable offensive games we've seen in a long time. Kane with 2 goals, 3 assists. Taser with 3-2. These guys are playing good hockey, Patty. And, I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to make the playoffs and go on a Stanley Cup run, but it's not out of the realm of possibility to think that they could win 5 or 6 in a row in the short term, get themselves back in that playoff race. Crazier things have happened in the Western Conference.
Somehow underlying in this otherwise disappointing season is arguably an MVP campaign from Patrick Kane, a resurgence from Jonathan Toews to the Jonathan Toews of old, or at least close to that. Alex DeBrincat continuing his ascension. And this now, since mid-December, the best power play in the league. My thought was they're connecting now in like over 37% of their power play opportunities. If during those 2 8-game losing skids, had they seen even something in the 20s or whatever, you maybe win half of those games and you're actually in the playoff conversation. But those two extensive losing skids, the coaching change early on, the new system adaptation, was really hard for this team, but somehow 88, he doesn't matter who you put out there with him.
What people want to know is, what does this mean to the rebuild? Because I think there's obviously a rebuild. So now you've got Kane, who's playing at an MVP-type level. You have Toews, who, as you point out, Pat, is had a resurgent year. These are guys that maybe at the beginning of this year, maybe a team that's rebuilding, you wondered the worst-case scenario, you know, break only in case of emergency, is trading one of those guys, floating one of those guys. I don't think you can do that now. No. Alex DeBrincat is another guy. So you've got 3 really strong assets to build around. Other than that, who's safe? Is there anybody who is safe in this? Because you look forward. I mean, they're not a playoff team. It'd be great if they went on a run, but this doesn't look like a playoff team despite all the individual success.
That's okay, too. I think when you talk rebuild, a rebuild of years past was 3, 4, 5, sometimes longer years to get a team back to where it once was. Kane and Toews don't have that long. And what we've seen in the National Hockey League this year is rebuilds can happen quick. It can happen in a blink of an eye. We've got some guys that still have years left that can play, that are going to be valuable. You've got the goaltending position is as strong as ever. Now let's hope Corey is able to come back and join the team. Delia looks great. I don't think with the money that the Hawks have to spend, it's going to take long to get this team back in the playoffs.
So if I told you you could get Artemi Panarin back here after this season, How much does that lift them toward that playoff?
How much does that cost you?
Well, that's
they're going to have a lot of cap space now, right?
Well, look, he's going to be a $10 million a year player, okay? And there's a lot of talk that he wants to go to New York, and they do have the cap space. But to Patrick's point, like, the way the NHL salary cap is set up, it was very punitive. It did not move up from year to year. It's hard to keep a core together. If you're looking for maybe a team out there that has done what the Hawks are hoping to do, it'd be Pittsburgh. They win the Cup in 2009. They hit some tough times in 10-11 when Sidney Crosby got injured and missed like the bulk of almost two seasons with concussion. And then they retweaked their lineup and retweaked their roster, and they've got some high ticket names on that roster as well. And they won two more cups. So if you're looking to say, like, can it be done? Yes, it can. But it is figuring out who's a must save and who you could possibly move.
It's also been done before in this organization. Yeah. We won in 2010. 2011 and 12 were poor teams. We lost in the first round.
Shouldn't made the playoffs, though.
Shouldn't even have made the playoffs that first year. Remember?
Right.
We snuck in the back door.
And lost in seven to Vancouver.
Lost in seven to Vancouver. Lost in six the next year, which was called Phoenix Coyotes.
Yep.
All of a sudden, Stan retools the roster. There's an influx of guys coming from Rockford. Brandon Saad, Letty. Crawford was now our starting goalie. Kruger, Andrew Shaw. All of a sudden, we had a good team again. We could have won the Cup in 13, 14, and 15. We happened to win two. So it can happen quick, and this management has done it before.
It looks like Brandon Saad has been playing better of late. It looks like, and obviously Tay's been playing like this all year. What do you see in both those guys specifically that has allowed them to have the success they've had individually?
Well, the game is changing in a way that doesn't really suit Brandon Saad and Jonathan Toews' skill set, more so Saad. I think Taser's, we talked earlier at the show about how he looks like the Taser of old. Well, the numbers do, but he looks like a new Taser to me. He's playing a lot more east-west. He's hanging on to the puck. He's making moves with his hands that we're used to seeing Patrick Kane make. Now Taser's jumping on board because the game isn't very physical anymore. Yeah, there's still the big contact hits, but the grueling, grinding-type play from the top of the face-off circles to the blue paint that Jonathan Toews was the best in the league at, the game doesn't do that anymore. So Jonathan's adapted. Sauter, to me, plays his best when he's north-south, lightning quick, hanging on to the puck. We're watching a highlight right
here. This goal right here, Patrick, is what you need. They need to put that on a loop at MB Ice Arena in the video room and say, Brandon, we need you to do that play more often.
And to my point about the game changing, this doesn't change. You can play as east and west as you want, but when you're this strong, that powerful, I know he doesn't look like he's moving very quick, but there's no one getting close to getting that puck off his stick. These guys continue to play. Sauter's got 16 goals now, Patty. That's a decent year. He's on pace for high 20s, maybe hitting the 30-goal mark. I can tell you as well as anybody that when you're shooting the puck like this and when you're scoring goals and filling the net, those great feelings just filter through the body and you get on hot rolls. Things weren't very good a month ago in November in Brandon Saad's world, in the Hawks' world. Things are rolling now. He can put up some numbers.
Defensively, that's the issue, really, right now.
Right.
And it's been that way for better
because
part
Because the
of...
best defensemen are the young defensemen? Is that why? Is that a simple
And they're still... I mean, Eric Gustafson is their best offensive defenseman. He has some issues and some things he needs to work through defensively. You know, and mind you, you know, Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook, if they were playing with guys that were maybe more of a top four caliber, maybe their numbers would be back to the numbers we're used to seeing from those two as well. Now, granted, you know, it's been tough sledding for these guys. These guys are used to being in the playoff conversation and contending for the cup. Duncan said it best. He's like, last year that was foreign to me. I didn't deal with that well. And I still think it's a shock to the system when for the better part of a decade, all you do is win, and now you're at the bottom of the West.
Of all the young guys, who's your favorite guy? You go, I'll put my chips on that guy. He's going to be a really good player going forward.
Well, it's kind of a no-brainer at this point, but DeBrincat is my guy.
Beyond him.
So he doesn't count. I like Dylan Strome. I think the way that Stan has gone out and traded a player, Nick Schmaltz, that many thought was going to be here for a long time, they didn't want to commit to him. Chicago did. They bring in two players for one, two former first-round picks. And Dylan Strome, I think, has been great since he's been here. And I watched him closely last game against the Capitals because he wasn't playing on Patrick Kane's line. You know, you hear the comments, anybody can score goals playing with Kaner. Well, Stromer came to the Hawks, and he performed, he produced, but he was playing with 88, who was in one of the hottest streaks of his career. He played great last night, carrying his own line. I think there's some serious chemistry between Stromer and the Cat. And the thing I like best about him is that he cares about the game. He asks the veterans about the glory days, the big playoff runs, what it takes to get better. He's looking for ways to improve all the time. Guys like that last.
He benefits from a change of scenery going from Arizona to Chicago. You're a guy young in your early in your career. You went from Philadelphia here. What does that do? How do you explain that? Because Strom is a guy who a lot was expected out of him when he was drafted. Didn't work out in Phoenix. Comes here and suddenly it is seemed to be
reignited.
Working.
Yeah, I think it speaks to the fact how much he cares about the game. He knows he's playing in a hockey market now, and Arizona's doing some good things and their fan base is coming around, but when you compare Arizona and Chicago hockey fan bases, it's not quite the same. So a guy that we saw it with Max Domi going from Arizona to Montreal, a crazy hockey market. He's thriving this year. I think Strom wants to be in big games. He wants to be a good player, and he's well on his way. Not everybody turns in. Sorry to say one last point to Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel and Austin Matthews, right, instantly a superstar.
Takes time.
He's a third overall pick. He's going
to
be good.
And to Patrick's point, he sees the game the way DeBrincat and Kane see the game, this East-West game. What they gave up in Nick Schmaltz in talent, they gained in hockey IQ and similar style from Dylan Strome. And you saw it with that pass that he made over to DeBrincat. There is chemistry out there. And as great as Patrick Kane is and Alex DeBrincat, you do need to find complementary parts. Strome, good choice there. He's the type of guy that could fit well.
When you were traded here, how quickly? Because it's a shock.
Yeah.
You know, they don't call some accountant up and go, hey, you've been sent to wherever. How quickly did you assimilate into, I can do this here?
It took me a while. I didn't score a goal in my first 25 games as a Blackhawk. And I had asked for a trade out of Philadelphia.
25?
25 games. And I wanted to play in the NHL, and I wasn't getting that chance in Philly. Other players. I was 24. So I was a late
And this market
prospect.
Wasn't as hockey-centric as it is
and
now.
Thank God it wasn't, because it probably wouldn't have lasted that long. But they just let me play here in Chicago. They let me develop. They let me make mistakes on the fly. But I didn't adjust to the city life. I was from a small town. I lived in the University of Vermont, is Burlington, Vermont. I was in the suburbs in New Jersey playing for the Flyers. So living in the big city was new to me. It took me some time, but
you adapted all right, my friend. You okay. Fit in pretty
nicely.
How much significance should we attach to Corey Crawford's presence back on the ice? And if any, you know, expectations are building, should they be?
I mean, it's great to see him back on the ice. I'm not sure what it means for his future. I mean, it's my first year not playing. I'm around the guys, but the last thing I want to do is ask questions like I'm part of the media. So I'm more their friends right now. I didn't even know he was getting back on the ice. It's great to see him do this. I know last year he was very close to returning at one point, and just the situation we were in and how he was feeling at different times, it didn't make a lot of sense to rush him back. To see him practicing and looking like he's moving well in there is a huge sign for the Hawks.
Thank you guys for being here.
Thanks for having
us. Appreciate the time. All right, NFL Championship Sunday, headed off. Close finishes, big plays, and a whole lot of controversy. Does the league need to add pass interference to reviewable plays to make sure what happened to the Saints never happens again? And after watching all the games yesterday, how far away are the beloved Bears?
Ricky's boys don't quit, and neither does NBC Sports Chicago's coverage. Download the My Teams app by NBC Sports and get your White Sox anytime, anywhere.
They've got to go back to the Brady sneak or something, don't they? Oh, they're killing it. Usually means a motion and a run out wide to the right. Here's the handoff into the end zone. I got to put Gronkowski out wide. They've got to get him. He's your guy when it's one-on-one. They finally got him. There he is.
On the top of the screen.
If he's doubled, you're going to throw inside right here to Edelman. You just look up there and pick him.
Here they come after Brady. He goes down the field to Gronk. Turns around, makes the catch.
They're going to run this ball. Kansas City's got to sell out.
Here's a handoff to Burkhead. Burkhead pulls ahead and scores the touchdown.
Gronk's got a chip. The running back's got to help, so he has time to throw. Once again, Edelman in the middle of the field.
Pocket sealed, down the middle. Edelman again with a third down catch.
Gronk is out wide. Watch the top of your screen. Watch this safety. If he comes down, there's a good chance he's throwing out there. It's Gronk for the first down. New England tried to play action earlier. I can't see it here. This has to be a run.
Second and goal to Burkhead. Burkhead to the end zone. Hello, Super Bowl. New England is heading back again for the third straight year.
Biggest winner of the weekend, Tony Romo. That guy was phenomenal. And we have Jason Goff and Jordan Bernfield here on the set now with David Haugh. I'm David Kaplan, and everything brought to you by our great partners with the Chevy Silverado. Okay, it was an amazing weekend of football.
Probably the best ever championship weekend.
I think so. I thought it was till I thought back to 06 when the Bears won to go to the Super Bowl. And I believe
there was nothing that dramatic.
As Indianapolis upset the Patriots.
As good as that was, seeing them beat the Saints at Soldier Field and the snow globe and everything else, it wasn't as dramatic as yesterday.
I think the intensity of it and the blown call and all the things that we'll get into, I think everything that got thrown in the pot, I think that's what made it as interesting as it was. And, of course, you get two all-time great quarterbacks going up against two up-and-coming quarterbacks. So you've got that narrative, the young genius narrative, the Bill Belichick thing. So, and Tom Brady being a social media star this entire year, it carried over because he did his IG music video again yesterday. So it was a fun weekend. It's the best day on the calendar sports wise.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that both went to overtime and the fact that you had, you know, the blown call, and then like Jason said, I thought that really any of the storylines that you could have picked in terms of this Super Bowl were good. You had the young quarterbacks versus the sort of the old guard, if you will. I mean, and you know, everyone hates the Patriots and Tom Brady, but the guy is the greatest ever. I mean, it's incredible that every time they just come
through. Well, they were good games, too. They weren't They weren't bad games. Right. They weren't sloppy games. They included a 24-point fourth quarter. They included good defense. The defense, you know, for the Rams won them the game in overtime. And then you had the drama of the longest walk-off field goal in playoff history.
Kickers matter.
Okay, let's talk about the worst non-call that maybe any of us have ever seen in a football game. How two guys, back judge and side judge, don't see this is insane. And those two should get fired and never officiate an NFL game again.
Well, I would fire them. You know, I would fire them. And I think that's, you know, you have to do more than just issue a statement. This was a legacy-changing non-call. And you can't just ignore that if you're the league. You have to take some strong action. You knew that it was blatant because the defender was beaten. It's helmet to helmet, it's pass interference, it's two fouls on one play with no call.
The league has been wearing masks, the players wear masks, you don't know who any of these referees are. I mean, in the NBA, we get to know, you know, a Joey Crawford, or we get to know a Scott Foster.
You get to know who's bad.
Exactly, and you get to know who's going to make certain calls. With the NFL, you have no idea who these people are, so they get to rest with anonymity. The problem that I have is you can't have the veil of player safety and have a helmet-to-helmet situation like you had on that call, or the pass interference. And it's not about subjective calls. This is an obvious objective call. And it wasn't made, and you saw Sean Payton mouth to the ref that this is a Super Bowl call. He said it right there on the field.
He knew
He knew exactly what was happening. I think the win probability was 98%. It went down to 81%.
And at that moment, somebody wheeled out that case of money that was in the Saints locker room. Just left.
It's gone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think in the NFL, I mean, I think we know who the refs are. We don't know who the side judges and back judges are, but we generally, I think, know the main ref.
Bill Vinovich.
Yeah. Right. I mean, everyone knows, like, Ed Hockley.
All the refs that you know are upstairs on the TV side.
Blakeman.
Yeah, Jason, you just said it. I mean, I think I don't know what exactly the problem is, and maybe you guys could shed more light on this, but it seems to me that some of the best officials in recent years would rather be on television on the sideline. No, I
agree. Less scrutiny, more money.
But the point is, if you're the league, that's a big problem. Because, like, when I'm watching Gene Steratore on CBS, even though I think he's very good on TV, if you're the NFL, you should want him on the sideline. Because I think the problem
had aged. It was time.
Okay, maybe Pereira, but like Dean Blandino, all these guys have been moving on to do TV gigs because it seems like it's a better job for them. The NFL.
Less stress.
Pereira's holding call wasn't what it used to be, was it?
No. Right, but the NFL should want the best officials available.
They should,
they need to pay them more.
Should they allow you?
Yeah.
Should they change the rule so that next year in this situation, After review, it is a pass interference and a 15-yard hit to the head.
Under 2 minutes, everything should be reviewable. If we can review everything on a touchdown play, wherever, whatever we need to review, I think under 2 minutes with games on the line like that, that was a black eye for the sport. That's the worst missed call that I can, like you mentioned, I can remember in my sporting life. I mean, we talk about Hugh Hollins. We talk about all these other things.
I remember the one that cost Armando Galarraga the perfect game.
Yeah.
But
85,
that was Don a regular Dekinger, season Don game. I mean, it was a personal accomplishment. It wasn't team going to the Super Bowl.
The whole city.
Here's our Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Mm-hmm. Which is more important for the league to fix? Instant replay or overtime?
I would say
NBCSportsChicago.com.
Instant replay, and Jason makes a good point. I think it would be the final 2 minutes of every playoff game. The rules are different. Pass interference should be reviewable. It doesn't matter how long the games are going to take.
Get it right.
You spend just as long talking about how what a travesty it is because of what they didn't get right. And that's the bigger problem. It's a credibility issue as much as anything. So I would be in favor of them discussing that at the next Rules Committee meeting.
Is it crazy?
Which Sean Payton is a member of, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm sure. Gonna
be some smoke.
He's going to lodge some complaints. Yeah. Is it crazy to suggest that maybe that both teams in an NFL game should have like a wild card challenge, or if there was like an egregious call late in the game that it could
like
be
like a buzzer?
If you got 250 cameras and everybody in the NFL world is at two locations, you should be able to have someone that the eye in the sky, whatever you want to call it, have someone buzz down and say, hey, we got to review this.
This isn't
one of the 16 games in week 14. This is to decide legacies. This is to decide a whole bunch of money as Sean Payton wheeled into that locker room. Like, this is big boy stuff right here. Jermaine Bushrod was talking about.
But they didn't.
But that's what I'm saying.
They screwed it up.
So you got everybody in two locations.
They had no recourse.
Right.
Yeah.
How about scoring touchdowns when you kicked field goals early?
That's true.
How about your head coach not throwing the football instead of running it and running the
that's
clock?
That's player error, though.
All those things.
I don't need foundational or infrastructure or error. I can mess up on my own,
right,
as we saw in the New England and Kansas City game with the timeout situation and some poor play calling. I don't need you messing it up for me. Right.
Those things are part of the game. I think, flaws and bad execution, that's always part of the game. You don't have to incorporate or accept part of the game being bad officiating, when you can fix it.
Agreed.
If there's a remedy, and there have been remedies. I mean, that's why instant replay, exists, is to prevent things like this. So if you have the technology to use and to correct this stuff, use it.
And then if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, and I was cheering for them, you're standing there going, game over. We just picked Tom Brady up again. We've got encroachment lined up in the neutral zone. I mean, the one that might have hit
Julian Edelman's
thumb.
That was the right call.
Yeah,
that was the
right call. Oh, you're talking about D4.
No, that one. I'm talking about D4. The one that might have gone off Julian Edelman's thumb.
I thought that hit him.
I didn't think it touched his finger.
I thought it touched his thumb.
Did you? Yeah.
So you're telling me you make that call, yet you're convinced it didn't touch him.
No, you're not convinced of anything. At that point, the referee is probably just relying that they're going to have replay to prove him right or wrong, and you're just hoping. That's what I think. Edelman sold it, and the ref.
Here's the Edelman.
Here it is. He sold it. Like, I didn't touch it.
And he didn't run after it.
Explain to me why they have a rule that you can't advance a muffed punt.
That's just as dumb as anything.
Exactly.
Because why not reward the guy for hustling?
Let me just say one thing, though. If Julian Edelman, I don't know if he sold it, because here's the thing. If you touched it and you know you touched it, wouldn't your natural reaction be to run after it? I mean, the idea that he didn't, you're either taking a huge gamble in that moment, which maybe he was, but to me, when I was thinking about it as this is being reviewed, I'm like, you know what? If I thought that I touched it, I'd be running after it.
I've got to think that if you're in that situation, you think that you just screwed up bad.
That Belichick may have trained his guys like they go dive on incomplete passes. Guys, if you screw up in that situation,
act like you didn't touch it. After 2 hours of getting beaten in the head,
you really want to give him so much credit for that.
Did you notice there was incomplete passes on the field?
His guys were diving on him. Diving.
Well, Chris Hogan didn't make a clear catch throughout the entirety of the game. But I think it's a bigger issue that we don't have when it comes to football. We don't have an issue because they change the rules every single year. They don't care how you feel about it. They're going to make the game any way you want, and you're going to watch it. They own 3 days out of the week throughout the football season.
Yeah, but see, they wouldn't have to change it, and people would watch anyway.
But they'll take it back to the lab and go, all right, here's football for you again, and you're going to watch it. The numbers were up this year because the stories were there. Whether it be Gruden, whether it be all the other things that was happening around, like Patrick Mahomes was a sensation. Like, the numbers were up this year. Everybody thinks, like, oh, it's, you know, people stopped protesting. No, there were actually stories on the field. So they know that they can change.
Second most watched AFC Championship game ever.
They know that they can change whatever they want to change. And people will talk about, oh, you got to, you know, the game is being, you're making it for wimps and all that other stuff. They can do whatever they want rules-wise, and people are going to watch.
You guys
want to
change overtime?
Yeah, for sure.
I know he does.
For sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
I do. I mean, I think that it's broken as well. I just don't understand how you can have a game of that magnitude decided by a coin flip. And I understand that, oh, you know, the defense should stop them. But it's incompatible with the way the league is going. It's,
Patriots everything are 3-0 in overtimes. All three, they won the coin toss, and the other team never touched the ball.
Right.
And Rich Gannon, he didn't touch the ball. Matt Ryan didn't touch the ball.
The league MVP, this year didn't
touch
the ball.
That's wrong. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, the reality of this is, when you really boil it down, this is entertainment. I'd rather be entertained by Patrick Mahomes getting a chance to tie or take the lead or win the game, period. And if I don't get that opportunity, then you're making the entertainment of what I'm watching worse.
The league has changed.
You want the college system?
Hold on. The league has changed everything to make it more about offense and quarterback.
Right.
Exactly.
So, and then they
defenses are marginalized, so it's easier to move the ball at that rate than ever. It's easier to make go on a 65, 70-yard
drive. I would take the college system. It's better than this system. This is a flip of the coin. At least a college system.
What if you just played a whole 15-minute quarter and whoever's leading at
That's
the
not
end
happening.
Of it?
That's not happening.
Safety.
Player union is not going to go for that at
because,
all.
Because, you know, you get hurt.
I'm talking about just in the playoffs, not in the regular season.
But then you're guaranteeing a fifth quarter instead of guaranteeing who's going to stop somebody. I think players want to get off that field no matter who's playing the AFC NFC
Fast
Championship.
As they can.
Yeah, exactly. And plus, that's the thing, too. You play four quarters of football, and now you lost the coin toss, and you kind of know, I'm beat up already. Now I got to stop Tom Brady for 60 more yards. Give my quarterback the football so we can see what's
can't
happening.
Can't you guarantee
as well?
One possession in overtime and then play it from there?
Yeah.
Can't you
the college
do that?
System does it right.
Right. So if Brady scored the touchdown and you're Andy Reid, you go back down.
Yeah.
Go. Let's go for two.
Go for two.
Yeah.
And you know what? Because then your guy Bill Belichick might be tempted if he scores, I'm going to go for two just in case they get the ball back scoring and say go for two.
It's more strategy.
And then if they both score and go for two and make it, then the game goes on until the fifth quarter is over.
They did this because of the shows that follow these football games. So you're talking about entertainment. They put this in because, you know, 60 Minutes and whatever's following, you know, the games on Fox, that those commercial
Look,
blocks.
I don't want my football ruined for Madam Secretary. Okay?
I'm just saying.
Okay,
this is why they do it.
At any point yesterday, because I know I felt this way, you're watching the games and go, you gotta be kidding me. The Bears can beat any of these teams.
I believe that. I believe that.
100%.
I believe that we saw
100%, huh?
What we saw yesterday was.
I'm not saying they would.
No. I'm just saying that kind.
Oh, could.
Yeah, the Bears can be beat by anybody.
The Super Bowl now includes a team the Bears dominated at home and a team they nearly tied at home. They came within a yard of a Hail Mary pass at the end of a game. Yesterday proved to me, suggested to me and everybody that the Bears are one player away from the Super Bowl.
Is that player Antonio Brown?
No, that player's a kicker. If you have a kicker, the Bears might be preparing for the biggest stage this week, today.
That player is a better Mitch Trubisky.
Well, he's going to be next year, Jason. I think he's going to be better next year.
No, I'm not saying he's bad. I'm just saying all he has to do is get incrementally better the way he made the
Absolutely.
Jump that he
look,
made
look
this
the way
year.
Jared Goff improved. I think this is the first time in a long time. You look at
you know
the two teams
on
in the
this
Super
show,
Bowl.
I have called him Jason.
Yeah, no, where's the camera? Where's the camera? Hey, shout out to Jared Goff for keeping the name alive, by the way.
How many times
I got
said
Dave Wannstedt
Rams
saying it
quarterback Jason
hey,
Goff.
Shout out to you. That's my white cousin on my
distant
mother's
relative.
Side. Yeah. It's a British last name, so shout out to you,
Can we
Jared.
Please get our own version of Greg the Leg Zuerlein?
Oh, yeah. You're going to pay a lot of money.
Oh, my goodness. That kick was good from 72 yards.
Well, you know, that's why
Look
we talk about the Bears and the context of, you know, this season and these playoffs. If they had a kicker that they could trust, they might still be playing. I mean, and that's not an exaggeration because, number one, they might have had a first-round bye.
Here
number
he goes.
Number two, they would have left.
Okay, this is the game where I want you to see how this soars through.
No, he's when
yeah,
he's
he had
the
a
strong,
lot.
I mean,
he
got the
you
strongest
gotta
leg.
Be kidding me.
He's Sebastian Janikowski level power in terms of his leg. And don't poo-poo Harrison Butker's field goal either for the Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah. Like, there were guys out there making money field goals and just sitting back thinking
so
about
if right,
I can't even think of a time that Gostkowski has ever missed.
Yeah,
I mean, can you
exactly,
ever think of a time
right,
that he's
right.
missed a big field goal?
You know, Patriots have had big kickers for 20 years.
He's a free
now.
Agent, yeah. unrestricted.
Yeah. Go get the best one.
And you got Robbie Gould unrestricted.
Yeah.
Now, he may
one.
Get tagged.
Well, you know, that if he does, then you just go out and get the second best right. version of Robbie Gould. But if Robbie Gould is out there,
okay,
you make the phone call.
$14 million.
You make the phone call. But look, if you're Ryan Pace and you're sitting there watching these games, as painful as it is, and you got your little priority list right there, number one, and this is not an exaggeration, number one priority this offseason is get a kicker
mm-hmm.
because you have everything else. You're going to have a quarterback that's going to progress and improve.
Get
you
a
got
right
an
tackle
offensive
in the
line.
Draft.
You'd like to get a right tackle in the draft. You mm-hmm. can still afford one in free agency. You supplement your depth in your roster. Your defense is coming back. What don't you have?
Amos, Callahan, Massey, all free agents.
Yeah, you know what, Cap? I mean, those are – I mean, due respect to their contributions, but they're replaceable. You
Go
don't have
guy.
A kicker.
Go
you,
get the guy.
You need to replace your kicker.
Yeah.
If you have a reliable kicker – you might still be playing.
Think about how cool it is, though. We're talking about the Bears needing a kicker to get to the Super Bowl as opposed to the Bears need a left guard, the Bears need two wide receivers, the Bears need
yeah,
a tight end.
Right. I know.
It sucks that they need
a kicker. We got a kicker. We need 52 more.
Yeah, it's awesome that they need a kicker, but it sucks that you
and
didn't
that's
have
legit.
One.
That's legit. That's not exaggeration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looks like this year's Cubs convention made big news in Chicago and in St. Louis. Chris Bryant calls St. Louis boring. Best fans in baseball, fire back. More importantly, is his shoulder okay? And can Theo find more arms to fix his ailing bullpen?
For Chicago Sports Talk with Sizzle, crank up the heat and turn on STL. Host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table every weeknight on the topics that are trending with our teams. Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado, weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.